time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, so if you cover a team that isn't great on the field, you at least want a little bit of entertainment. And the Texans, I will say, I do think they're on the up and up. I think they're improving. And
can't go any further down.
Making a concerted effort to do so. Their social media team could use a little bit of work. It is Passover. Happy
yes.
to all who celebrate. And
L'chaim to all my Jewish brethren out there.
Retweet. And they tweeted a picture of football players, and with the football, where the football should be is a piece of matzah.
Right. They're running around with matzah.
And
like
the tweet says, "Happy Passover to all who celebrate," to which the replies are, "Y'all should have passed over tweeting this."
Nice dad joke.
I'm not sure y'all know what Passover is with a tweet like this. I mean, it's pretty bad. It's not bad. It's just a little awkward.
Well, look, I mean, I think maybe some people are going to view it as insensitive. My first reaction to it is more just thinking, who let Jack Easterby have
I don't think it's Jack.
The Twitter account. I mean, well, I know.
Wait, you really do?
No, I don't, but I do. I mean, this is what my imagination thinks, is that, you know, the Texans, who are all about culture, which they love to remind us about all the time, did something for the culture. And maybe Jack Easterby got back into stand-up sermon mode and was thinking about, like, hey, what would be a really funny Razzie joke that I could put out here?
He did do stand-up comedy.
Let's do a little Photoshop of some matzah on top of the footballs. And I'm not going to think about, you know, him doing impersonations of people, you know, like he did with California guys and Boston people. No, I'm not going to take it any further than that. I'm just going to stop right here. The Texans are fun.
The Astros are always making things interesting as well, but it's more so on the field as they take on the Mariners. That's tonight at 8:42 p.m. It'll also be tomorrow and Sunday. And then after that, we finally have some baseball at home at Minute Maid Park.
Home opener. It's right around the corner. What's up with these stupid 42 times? Can we just get a nice round number? Can we get it 8 o'clock? Can we get it, I guess, 9 o'clock?
I do wonder what the legitimate reason behind that is.
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, what's the compromise here? This is just a bizarre, random start time. And we've seen it with the Angels series, too. I know I sound like Monk right now, Tony Shalhoub, just being weirded out by strange numbers that don't make a whole lot of sense. But that's where I'm at. It's a weird time to start a game.
You have a little love triangle, and I'm not talking about one of your regular love triangles with the girls at the Handlebar downtown on Washington, but this is an actual, like, baseball love triangle.
Yeah. So, look, guys, you have to respect my decision. It's 2022.
Oh, God. Are you one of those, I don't even know how to say it, polymery?
Polygamous.
Sure.
No, it's polygamous.
I'm so moral, it could never even cross my mind.
What's wrong with being polygamous, Vanessa? You're saying it so judgmentally. Look, I am somebody who covered the Mariners for 2 years. It was a nice time. It's not as great a time as it was covering the Astros when I was here before I went up to Seattle. But I like both of these teams. And my question is, are you allowed to root for two teams in the same sport? I feel like I have the extenuating circumstances to do it. And I'm going to be rooting for the Astros against the Mariners tonight. But I want both teams to have fun. I just want the Astros to win by like one run in the end. So it'll be a fun game. We have a good old time. I don't want to be mean to the Astros, you know, to the Mariners. I don't want them to bully them. I want it to be a good game and for everybody to have fun. And for my Houston audience and my Seattle audience to become fast friends.
Can you root for two teams in the same sport? We want your opinion.
I feel like you can, but you have to have legitimate reasons for doing it. Mine are legitimate. I don't know where I'm from anymore, okay? I like to identify as being from Texas, but if I'm talking about my athletic prowess, I say I'm from Florida. If I'm talking about what teams I grew up rooting for, I talk about being from Boston. But in this situation, having covered both of those teams and being away from my like original hometown for such a long period of time, I do think that I have extenuating circumstances, but you have to have some really damn good reasons to say, yes, I root for multiple teams if you do.
Pause real quick. We're getting a couple texts on the text line. The start time is 8:42 because it's Jackie Robinson Day.
Oh.
Got it. Canceled. We did not really.
Paul
don't
has been canceled at 10:05.
We love that. We're very pro Jackie Robinson Day. Sorry, go ahead. So extenuating circumstances.
I don't know. Jackie Robinson Day, really confusing. Everyone wearing the same numbers. I don't get it. Vanessa.
No.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. let's go back into this.
Shots.
I feel like if you are rooting for two teams, you have to be really careful about where they are. And this is why it's weird, because the Astros and Mariners are in the same division. So with that in mind, obviously I am a questionable person.
Right.
I would be getting flagged at any ballpark I go into, say they were checking the veracity of your fandom. And then I would explain it, and hopefully I wouldn't, you know, be prosecuted or something like that. If they're in the same conference, is that allowed? If they are two teams that are, I don't know, in different divisions, is that allowed? Because you can't root for two teams in the same division.
Yeah, the Astros and Mariners, that would make it hard. We have a text on the text line, 2231. I'm born and raised in Houston and love the Astros, but I grew up idolizing Ken Griffey Jr., so I love the Mariners equally.
Hell yeah.
It was easier to root for both teams before they ended up in the same division.
That is true, because the Astros, of course, were in the National League for the longest time.
So my dad, God rest his soul, he and all his friends are in their 60s, and they all obviously grew up in Indiana and were in their 20s by the time Indiana got an NFL team. So my dad and all his friends liked either the Packers, Bears, Bengals, or Steelers.
Okay.
Anybody within like the region of Indiana. Like when I say region, I mean a couple states away. But once the Colts moved there, obviously they're there for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. You start kind of rooting for them. So like for my dad, it was like the Packers, NFC, Colts, they play each other like every 6 years. I mean, it literally
yeah, you're
does. Fine. But for you, but it is tougher, I would imagine, if you are our friend, actually whose name is Dusty, 2231
on
the text
Dusty.
Line, or you, where they're playing every year.
Is there an Astros/Mariners fan bar in Houston that we can hang out at, Dusty? You know, maybe have a catch afterwards. I think in Houston there's probably a dynamic like this, where for those who weren't turned off by the NFL altogether when the Oilers were stolen from us, did you start rooting for another team? I know there's some weirdos here who still root for the Titans, and I don't know what's wrong
with
you.
That's just so strange.
Like your girlfriend left you.
Right.
And you're like, oh, but she'll come back someday. You know, she just went out for a cigarette. It's been 30 years, man. You have gray hair now. But I think there were probably some other people who said, all right, well, I'm going to pick another NFL team. Maybe you pick Dallas. Actually understandable if the Oilers left town. That would have been a good time to pick Dallas, too. Things haven't gone so well since that moment in time. But I feel like you would be allowed to do it, too, if your team left. And then all of a sudden, another team comes back. And you're like, well, I mean, the Texans are here. I'm supposed to root for them. But I'm not 100% bought in because they just make it so damn hard with their tweets of photoshopping matzah.
Somebody photoshopped.
What, Laramie Tunsil
on the cross?
What is going on?
It's just gotten out of control.
Wait a second. Hang on. I need context. Why is Laramie Tunsil on a cross?
Because of the tweet. The point is like insensitive Photoshop tweet.
Jesus, literally. Because yeah, today's Good Friday. Speaking of that, I mean, it is funny. I mean, I wonder why the man upstairs, he's looking down. He's like, why is this called Good Friday? Can we call this like not
Good Friday?
Right. It wasn't a good Friday for me. But anyway.
Hashtag the tomb is empty.
Mm-hmm.
But we are getting a lot of opinions on this on the text line and on Twitch about if you can root for two teams. If you're 12, yes, says somebody.
Thank you. I am 12.
And then 0613 on the text line says, nah, you're a grown-ass man. Do what you want.
Thank you. No, that guy's on the right track, Vanessa, because there are some people who will get after me for, wow, Paul, you like Hawaiian shirts. Yes, I do. I'm wearing a shirt with alpacas wearing sombreros
today. Two buttons on buttons.
Well, it's Friday. Friday vibes. Wow, Paul, you like drinks that look kind of girly. I don't care. They taste good. What's wrong with anything like that? You're allowed to do whatever you want. However, I do think that when it comes to whether or not you're going to say some of these things in public, you might end up getting shamed for saying that you root for multiple teams.
Right.
You might get that unless you have a legitimate reason. I feel like my reason is legitimate.
9291 on the text line says, when I was young, the Oilers left and I had the biggest crush on Brett Favre and he was one of the best ever. I've been a Packers fan ever since. I'm not one that gets really on people. Here's the tricky thing
like
about
players.
Here, and that's what I was about to say. Our generation is very, we'll move with players.
LeBron
I
fans.
Don't like that. I can take it. I understand it. But I don't like that. I'm more lenient for people like you that have like a main team and a secondary team. What's your deal with the Red Sox? You're from Boston.
Yeah, I stopped liking them. 2011.
How does that happen?
They started smearing people for the collapse that they had at the end of 2011. I was of the mindset of, okay, well, there was a manager who coached the team for 8 years, and all of a sudden they stopped buying in. And that's fine. Like, you move on. But they smeared him as if he was this bad person. Terry Francona, like, oh, he's getting a divorce. This must be why they collapsed down the stretch. It's like, what? What does that have to do with anything? Oh, he might be doing some drugs. Like, they randomly put out these stories. And then they hired Bobby Valentine, who sucks. And I remember just thinking to myself, why are you smearing a guy who won you the first two World Series in like 100 years? So I got out after
so a bad couple of years ruins a whole franchise for you.
Well, I mean, they'd already won the World Series in 04. So, there wasn't really a point for me to keep
watching.
Were
you at the World Series parade?
No. I was living in Florida when that happened. But it was great because that's another thing that's funny. There's a lot of people in the Tampa Bay area that root for same division, but they root for the Yankees because the minor league team for the Yankees used to play in Tampa, and their spring training was in Tampa, and the Rays were always so bad, then the Devil Rays, that they were just like, oh, well, I'm actually a Yankees fan, even though the Devil Rays are here. So that was another situation where you have two people, or you have fans that are rooting for two teams that are in the same division.
Can you root for two teams in the same sport? Let us know. We're getting a lot of mixed bags. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, Kyler Murray continues to push leverage he simply does not have. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Paul and I are so bad at being adults.
No, I'm good. I paid my taxes on time. I got my registration done. I got my new license done.
I did all that too.
I did it all in 1 week like a big boy.
Yeah, me too. I got taxes. Shout out to Vincent at H&R Block. And then I got my new Texas ID. And when the lady took my ID picture yesterday, I like kind of tried to do the cute angle. And I turned to my good side and she goes, you have to look at the camera straight on. Sorry.
Well, see, at least you looked at the camera straight on as opposed to the last time I got my picture taken when I needed to get a replacement Texas license. I went in looking like I was hungover because I might have been hungover one day. I came in on like a Monday after a day of intense Sundaying, and I didn't know that they would take a picture of me. So I looked like absolute crap.
Oh, no.
And I remember my mom saw it once, and she was like, what the hell was wrong with you this day? Because I had this big frown on my face and looked absolutely miserable.
My old one looked like a mugshot.
Yeah. Mine similarly. So this time I got my hair all pretty and aww. I came in and I got a big old smile on my face. And now I'm just going to look like the most alarmingly cheesy person that ever has lived. If I ever get pulled over, they're going to be like, why are you so happy? And I'll be like, I'm just living the dream, man.
Living the dream. Give the dad response. All right. Quarterback Kyler Murray and his agents continue to push for leverage that, quite frankly, I do not think they have. Arizona has yet to extend a long-term offer to Kyler Murray. And now Murray and his agent, Eric Burkhardt, are telling people that they have pulled their initial offer, which, by the way, the Cardinals never responded to. So they put out that big thing with grammatical errors and all capital letters saying, Kyler wants to be here, blah, 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 blah. And then they make an offer, and the Cardinals literally ghost them and never even respond.
Good.
And now they're like, we're pulling the offer. Here's Tom Pelissero of NFL Network, who has been all over the story talking about Kyler Murray.
Here's where we stand. The Cardinals never countered and have not made any contract offer to their Pro Bowl quarterback, Kyler Murray, whose agent Eric Burkhardt informed the team weeks ago that his initial offer is now off the table. Now, Arizona insists it is not trading Murray. It wants to extend him eventually. But I can tell you, other teams are monitoring this situation closely. Cardinals have Murray under contract for this year, a fifth-year option for 2023. They could franchise tag him for a couple of years after that.
Okay, so here's the thing, and that, again, was Tom Pelissero of NFL Network. My whole thing with Kyler Murray, what has he done to prove that he has this kind of pull?
Thank you. Nothing.
He has a complete like lack of self-awareness. He was a disaster in the playoff game, if you remember. What have we seen that warrants this demand? Like, the fans are not screaming for Kyler Murray the way that Cincinnati fans will be screaming for Joe Burrow or the Bills with Josh Allen or Baltimore with Lamar. Nobody is screaming because he hasn't done anything.
He's probably going to point at Pro Bowls. He's probably going to point at being the 2020 midseason MVP because he threw a Hail Mary to DeAndre Hopkins against the Buffalo Bills. But you're right. There is nothing for him to actually point at and say, I deserve contract X, Y, and Z. This is a spoiled child seeing that his best friends got awesome toys at his birthday party, at their birthday parties, or at whatever.
Right. Concierge or whatever.
And he has to wait for his birthday. But since he saw four people have birthday parties in the same month, and by birthday parties, I mean the contract extensions that you've seen for Derek Carr, for Deshaun Watson.
Right, Deshaun's the one I
Aaron
think that
Rodgers.
Really did it.
Right. He's looking at it and thinking to himself, well, where's mine? Wait your bleeping turn and prove to me that you can actually last through an entire NFL season and not be banged up going into the playoffs. That's a legitimate thing he has to prove. And look, it's not like I think he's a bad player. I think he's good. I understand the idea that he will get an extension. But right now, if you're the Cardinals, are you 100% in with Murray? I think the answer has to be no, just because with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson similarly, you're not 100% sure how long this road is going to go because they both leave themselves open to injury with the style of play that they have.
I agree, and I think that when you really take inventory from all the quarterbacks in the league, you know that there's always going to be a landing spot for every quarterback. Look at what happened with Carson Wentz. There's backups. But it's almost similar to the Baker Mayfield deal. Baker's at least won a play. You know, it's one of those things.
True, but if we're going to compare the two quarterbacks, Murray's clearly better than
he
Mayfield.
Is better. I'm just saying the idea of acting like you are owed all of this and having an attitude when you haven't proven it.
Entitled generation, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's my generation, so I can't really say much, but I mean,
we've all been entitled before, but I feel like this one in particular, it feels like everything is already set in stone as to how their career is going to play
right.
out. And respect for having that confidence, but there's a lot of uncertainty. And the reality is that Murray continuously gets banged up in the latter months of the year and looks like a totally different player when he does. Credit to him playing through it when he can, but you have to be wondering whether or not this is going to be able to be sustainable for 6, 7, 8, 9 years, because that's what this next contract extension keeps him probably with the Cardinals still.
They were talking about it on ESPN, too, about how when you hear John Harbaugh and Steve Bisciotti talk about Lamar, they're like, look, we're going to get it done. Both sides want to get it done. He's so focused on winning a Super Bowl and winning playoff games that it's not even on the table right now. Is a little bit of that a PR spin to the fact that they haven't done it yet? Sure, but the point being, Lamar is so competitive. Josh Allen comes across as so competitive. You don't even see that passion for Kyler. And
a lot of,
he's like, he's playing video games and he's part of the phase
he's
or whatever
aloof.
That Bronny. Yeah, and it doesn't even seem like he really wants to be there.
He's not, I think it's fair to say that as far as leadership goes, that you can question that where Lamar Jackson, I think his biggest obstacle to getting a new contract is the fact that his mom is his agent. And
he does not have David Mulligetta or Eric Burkhardt or
right.
Lee, you know, Steinberg.
But
right.
he has won an MVP, and he single-handedly carried that Ravens team to a 14-2 season a couple of years ago. Obviously, it didn't go so well in the playoffs. But, yeah, with Murray, there is this aloof detachedness to him that even we can see, and that the Cardinals decided, okay, he's going to play this game this way. We're going to leak out some details about him. And you've seen a couple about how, you know, he didn't want to go back into the end of that game at the, you know, the season ender to the Rams. He didn't want to, I guess, be as engaged during the week and when it comes to just some other things too. So, yeah, he's got some damage control to do, I think, before he can get back into this. But instead, he's like, well, if you don't give me a contract by the draft, I'm going to demand a trade. Like, that will do anything.
Right. 7554 on the text line brings up a good point. Let me tell you, his dad is in that ear a lot. Most of that talk comes from daddy. His dad, it was known to be very pushy and very problematic, even when he was in college. Mm. What you see a lot of people bring up and what I want to dismiss as an even possibility is the fact that he could go play baseball.
No,
he's not going to play baseball. It's been a long and who didn't Oakland draft him?
Yeah.
So the amount of money that he could make in Oakland is not even comparison to other baseball teams,
right?
Let alone the NFL.
I remember Russell Wilson was doing this too. Like he would go to spring training. Yeah, I played baseball in college. Like as if this was some sort of leverage that he could hold over the Seahawks. So he did it with I think the Rangers and he did it with the Yankees, and it was just incredibly annoying because it was just a PR stunt essentially. That's not happening. You're right on that. Because they have to see whether or not he's actually good, major league capable, before they even think about paying him. And obviously with team control and contracts and stuff like that baseball does, he will not get paid for a really, really long time. This thing, though, that apparently they might ask for a trade in the next couple of weeks if they don't get that new
Kyler
deal.
And Eric Burkhart, you mean?
Right. That, to me, I wonder what he thinks is going to happen. Because we saw last year, leading up to the draft, Aaron Rodgers was apparently demanding a trade the day of. It almost stole the spotlight away.
And forget the Adam Schefter report.
Right. What did it accomplish other than annoying the Packers? So if you want to annoy the Cardinals and make them feel uncomfortable or embarrassed for a short period of time, like that, to go back to what you asked earlier, Vanessa, what leverage does Kyler Murray have? That is legitimately the only leverage that he has, is that he can be annoying on draft night. And that's not enough to force a new contract. So I would just advise him and his team to keep this in-house like they should have earlier. They probably, the Cardinals, want to give him that long-term extension. But there is no reason for them to do it until they can determine whether or not you can actually make it through a 17-now game schedule.
I also just think that different ownership groups move differently, right? And like Michael Bidwell, who owns the Cardinals, is not known for freaking out and giving long-term deals, and you know, like he's not like erratic. And so I just think that they're playing a game that they're probably not going to win. And I go back with Kyler, like I said, I know it's a different situation with Baker Mayfield, but I do go back to, okay, if you say you're this hungry competitor, if you say that you have an underdog mentality, if you know, all of the cliches that these guys use as ammo, as fuel, as motivation, then prove it. And perform on the football field, be a leader in the locker room, step up in big moments, win a playoff game in dominating I mean, this is a guy, now D-Hop wasn't healthy the whole season, mm-hmm. nor was J.J. Watt. But they're bringing in the pieces around you, and you're still not getting it done.
And it's a tough division, but it's a less tough division with Russell Wilson now gone. It's, I think, a division that with the Rams, okay, they're probably one of the top three favorites in the NFC. And San Francisco's a good team. But at some point, you got to break the wall. And you can blame things on Cliff Kingsbury, and you can blame things on things around you as well. But at a certain point, yeah, you got to be better than what you have shown if you are going to start being a whiny little baby. When you see other guys get contracts and say, well, where's mine?
Like, right.
It's just entitled, and it does nothing to show you that Murray is someone who cares about team, that cares about being a leader. It's a individualistic AAU kind of player that's just a turnoff.
There were somebody on the text line said, have the Cardinals issued a press release in response? I don't think they have. I don't think the Cardinals have said anything.
There was a previous, I think, story that involved both the Cardinals and Burkhart that involved that. Maybe they have that we haven't seen over the course of this commercial. But I mean, what do you say to this? What the Seahawks used to do with Russell Wilson was just ignore it. They should just ignore it. There's no point in engaging with this drivel. It's just insufferable and annoying. And I would just completely stay radio silent. Another text, the Cardinals should pass over on Murray. Appreciate
Hey-o!
The dad jokes.
You should do social media for the Texans.
It makes me think about, so I remember Easter weekend, my family and I, we always used to watch two movies. We used to watch, first off, the original Charlton Heston, Ten Commandments. Because Passover, yeah. You know, generally falls on the same weekend as Easter. Passover is like real messed up. You know, like Passover was all the Hebrews that were in bondage in Egypt. They like put blood over the top of the door, and like the Holy Spirit went and he killed the firstborn son of every single Egyptian.
Yep.
So I always think of that movie because that part is so scary
when they
do it with the smoke that's going through the whole neighborhood. And then afterwards, we'd watch Jesus Christ Superstar, which is fantastic.
I remember everybody at my church going to see Passion of the Christ, and I was like, I'm not seeing that. Hard pass. Not happening.
I remember one day, and
especially wasn't Mel Gibson calling his 12-year-old daughter like a pig and leaving her voicemails while all that was happening?
Mel Gibson is certainly something else. But I remember we had a day once where my mom took us to go see Passion of the Christ, and then we went, and then we went to confession right afterwards.
No.
I mean, we were all feeling it in that moment in time. It was an effective. It got all of the feelings of guilt out because I was like, "Whoa, well, that guy just died for me. Holy crap!"
Yeah,
literally.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, the 76ers and Raptors set to face off. Plus, is quote winning culture a thing or BS? That's next.
This is ESPN 97.5. Listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
So our producer Sean Mapes pointed out that it was actually Alec Baldwin that called his daughter, 12-year-old daughter, bad words.
How dare you confuse
Alec Baldwin
with Mel Gibson.
But Mel Gibson also went on a rant against one of his baby mamas.
Oh.
So I just get really terrible men that are rich and wealthy confused. Sue me.
If you got to pick between the two today, you got to pick Alec Baldwin. Can't pick Mel Gibson on Passover.
Is he Jewish?
No, Mel Gibson, he is the opposite of Jewish.
Anti-Semitic?
Yeah.
Bad people.
Bad people. 713-780-3776. What do you think about bad people? 713-780-ESPN. Are they actually bad?
Hot topic or are they layered? 76ers taking on the Raptors starting tomorrow for the NBA playoffs. The James Harden experience continues, or experiment would probably be the better word in Philadelphia. This game, though, will be in Canada. As they take on the Raptors.
Should I continue to be my growing, evolving self?
No, I like Petty Paul.
I know.
God, I like Petty Paul
well,
a lot.
I'll be honest then. On Saturday at 5 o'clock, written down already, in blood, I will be watching that game and I will be praying for James Harden, who doesn't feel that much pressure going into this series because I'm guessing he's just completely removed from all conversation about him. Must be a good, zenful place to be. He said he doesn't feel any pressure going into this series. Are you kidding me? You don't feel any pressure?
He should feel all the pressure, and the fact that he doesn't shows how arrogant he is because it has not worked out for him. They went 5-0, Philly did when he first got there. The last 16 games, they're 9-7. So we see this with James Harden every time he starts anew. He's great. He gives the effort. He does the great press conference. He assimilates well with his teammates. And then it goes downhill. So that's not – but he's struggling with shooting. And this has the potential to be a really tough couple of games because they are without Matisse Thybulle. He's their best perimeter defender. Mm-hmm. He's not vaxxed, so he can't play in Canada.
Best home field advantage Toronto has.
Right.
You better get vaccinated. Classic Canadians pulling a fast one. I think that this will be interesting because of the way that Toronto is. I would expect Philly to win this series because of Embiid. And I always feel like it's round two for James Harden. I bet we'll see a rather, at least comparatively, engaged James Harden for this round. I just wonder, okay, can Nick Nurse and everything that Toronto does together, I know it's a cliche, but can that beat two, I would say, a little bit more individual-minded players, and specifically James Harden and to a lesser extent, Joel Embiid? But, I mean, Harden has to play the way that he used to, and he doesn't do it anymore. Harden used to be a fantastic north-south player. I hated all the flopping and all the antics and all that stuff. But I always felt like when he gets ahead of steam going forward, it's a little bit like Derrick Henry in football where he's going to power through the lane. get by people, and he's also going to create contact.
I like that comparison.
Get to the free throw line. He was very good at that, and he's not doing that to the same degree that he does anymore. And it's hard to not say the guy's lazy when you see him consistently standing outside, off the ball, not moving, and when you see him settle for three-point shots when, I believe all time, he's like the 270th ranked three-point percent shooter, but he is the number two or number one in terms of three-point attempts all time. The guy takes and settles on possessions when, if he actually were to attack and if maybe he had a little bit better stamina, that I feel like he still could be the guy that we saw here in Houston like 4 years ago.
Do you remember when it seemed like he had gained like 30 pounds and then all
Which
of a sudden
time?
He lost it when he got to Brooklyn?
Philly.
Harden said, pressure, no, I feel good. Quote, I'm ready to hoop. There's nothing to it. We sure hope there's nothing to it. To me, this is the prove-it year for James Harden. He's gotten everything that he wants on every team he's been on. He's been moved around. He's demanded what he wants. He gets what he wants. And if he doesn't produce, there are no excuses.
What's it going to take for the people who defended Harden for all these years to also say that, all right, you actually have to prove that this was worth my time? Because I know some of them still like Harden here, and they feel like, well, the Rockets did him right.
People who defend James Harden are people who make excuses in life.
Ooh.
And if you're watching the Twitch feed,
she's looking directly at the camera right now.
Who like James Harden are people who make excuses in life. In work, in relationships, with their finances, with their fitness. People who make excuses for James Harden are those people.
Oh,
and
wow.
I tend to not like them.
Look, I tend to not like them either. But you went a step further, and I like it. I mean, this is very awesome that you're just going to say, now you're going to judge their life decisions based off
I will,
of liking
because
James Harden.
Everything is everybody else's fault. You can be given everything on a silver platter. You can be moved to the team you want to move to. You can have pieces brought in. Like, oh my God, Russell Westbrook maybe? And it doesn't work. And then when it doesn't work, it's somebody else's fault. Oh, and then he leaves town and you still go to his restaurant. You still go to 13.
Who do you think will be blamed if it doesn't work out? So
it should be James Harden.
But
you mean by those people?
And
Daryl Morey.
And by James Harden. But you can't. Daryl Morey's always had Harden's back. Daryl Morey rolled the dice on James Harden to make the trade to get him away from the Oklahoma City Thunder and say, this guy can be our number one player. Like, Morey, I don't think you can blame quite yet. But who?
Oh, I don't think you can at all. I'm just saying that's who people would.
I don't know. I think it's Doc Rivers.
Oh.
I think they'll be like, okay, Doc Rivers, this is a guy who constantly has leads in playoff series. He blows it all the time. He talks too much trash. He seems to be calling James Harden out publicly. You're already seeing some tea leaves that might indicate that Doc Rivers isn't long for here. I remember Sean Mapes last week.
The writing is on the wall.
There is a couple of moments where it seems like they're already looking at a possible replacement in Philadelphia. Right, Sean? I forget what the specifics were.
No, the story was that that Doc Rivers is one of the favorites for the Lakers job.
Right. So if you want to really like go down a conspiracy theory rabbit hole, why is he a finalist for the Lakers job when he's got an MVP in Joel Embiid? Well, maybe it's because he's going to get pushed out if this doesn't work out with James Harden. So then James Harden will have killed Hall of Famers and plus players, plus coaches along the way in his career. Kevin McHale maybe wasn't a good coach. Dwight Howard, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook. Kevin Durant,
blame any of
Kyrie
those
Irving.
People, though.
Well, you said it.
Yeah, irrational people that make excuses for their everyday lives. Can't stand them.
Who else would you blame?
And you know who you are.
Would you blame Joel Embiid? Like, how?
No.
If
the person to blame is James Harden. Do we know his middle name? What's his middle name?
Horatio.
Robert.
Alphonse. Dietrich. Pierre. Louise. Alfonso.
James Edward Harden Jr.
Edward, what is he? Some royal? some British stuff? I'm very curious.
It's a red flag. If I went out with a guy and he made an excuse for James Harden, the date is over. Because
I was late to the date because I was watching James Harden.
Because that proves that you make excuses, that you don't take accountability, that you think everything is everybody else's fault. Yeah, if you make excuses for James Harden, it's a red flag. There are other red flags. What do the kids say today? Gaslighting, toxicity, lying, liking James Harden and making excuses. Not just liking him. You can like him. Making excuses for James Harden, red flag.
I have a question.
Sure.
What does gaslighting mean? I still don't know.
Oh, gaslighting is, yeah.
Everyone likes to say it, and I'm it, like,
because
it's a word.
90% of the time. So I did do some research on
dog
this.
Dog whistle, that's
it,
another word.
It is when people are, it's when somebody tries to tell you that you're crazy for actually knowing the truth.
Thank you.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That I honestly didn't know, and yeah, I never wanted so to look it up.
It would be like if I were late, and you're like, wow, Vanessa, you were late. We agreed on 8 p.m. for this meeting. And I say, no, we didn't. You're okay. Psycho. We agreed on 8:30. And you're like, but I have the text right here. And I'm like, you need therapy because you have issues.
So that's what you do when the excuses don't work. You go to gaslighting. Right.
What?
Like,
me?
No. I'm not talking about you. Like, if someone is making excuses, their next step when the excuses don't work is they try to gaslight
somebody. Well, but you didn't see Harden when he, but Harden, blah, blah, blah. No excuses. If you make excuses for James Harden, that is a red flag.
And then there's dog whistling. What is dog whistling?
I have no idea.
When you whistle at a dog?
I don't really date a lot, so these terms, I don't really need
These are the political terms, though. Gaslighting and dog whistle.
That's true.
I feel like everyone uses these words all the time, and I'm like, I don't know what they mean, so no one must know what they mean.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, is winning culture real or is it BS? We'll get to that. Can you handle booing? And what is dog whistling? We don't know. What's next?
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Dog whistling is the use of coded or suggestive language in political messaging to garner support from a particular group without provoking opposition.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so if say we were to pander to our audience, we would just say some things about James Harden sucking, and that way, yeah, we're doing the same thing. We're like, oh, James Harden in the playoffs? Is that a dog whistle?
Yeah, I don't
know.
I don't know. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant. Sean Mapes is our producer. I am at Sports Vanessa on Twitter. You can get at him at Gallant Says. Can you handle booing?
Well, I mean, we could test this out in theory right now. So Baker Mayfield on that podcast, that long podcast that he did, at one point said that I would love to go up to somebody in their cubicle and boo them. And boo them and boo them until they just shrivel, essentially. So, I mean, we could try this out right now.
Okay.
I mean, do you have a hot take on anything? Just anything.
I could redo my James Harden hot take.
I mean, shoot, I think people would probably like to hear it. The text
okay,
line loved
it. Okay, ready?
Go ahead.
I think if you like
boo.
James Harden, and if you make excuses for him constantly,
boo.
It shows that you make excuses in your everyday life, whether
boo.
You're talking about fitness,
boo. Boo. Boo.
Your family, your relationships. It kind of just shows that you make excuses.
You can handle it. Wow.
I can.
I mean, goodness gracious. Someone's done live TV, and you
okay,
have not
my
handled
turn.
It. Okay. All right.
Ready?
What am I going to talk about? Oh, I'm going to talk about why I can root for both the Astros and Mariners and why you can't tell me otherwise. Listen, people, I've lived
boo,
in a
boo,
bunch
boo,
of different
boo.
Cities. And over the time
boo,
in those different cities,
boo,
you know what I've done?
Boo,
I have
boo,
learned that you don't have to root for just one
boo,
team.
Boo,
you can root for
boo,
multiple.
Boo.
And that's why I like the Astros
boo.
And Mariners. Okay, so we can both handle it.
Yeah, we can both handle it.
Okay, cool.
We're
okay.
experienced enough.
But
Baker Mayfield had a point where he wanted to boo people at their cubicle because he was mad that people were critiquing him as a quarterback.
Yeah, and Sean Mapes, who is doing a million different things because it's a company holiday, apparently. There's like no one here, so Sean has to do everything for everyone at the entire building. Sean, this is Baker Mayfield on that podcast.
I would love to show up at somebody's cubicle and just boo the out of them.
Yeah. I don't blame him for feeling that way. I imagine every athlete wants to do that.
Right.
And honestly, I think it would be hilarious.
I think it'd be awesome. I think it should be a commercial.
Here's Steve in accounting. He's trying to get the books done on time by tax day, and he's just getting mercilessly booed for some reason by Brandon Cooks. What is Brandon Cooks doing here? He's booing me. This is weird. It's because, Steve, you talked trash about Brandon Cooks on the internet once. That would be fun, just one day to allow athletes to do it. But obviously, there's like this whole sacred dynamic between fans and players where even if you're a player and you legitimately have cause to be mad with fans, you have to pretend like it never bothers you at all.
Yeah, I think there's a balance, right? I think that you can call fans out for being unfair, but also in the case of Baker Mayfield, as we've talked about with James Harden, Kyler Murray, whatever, when you're not producing at the level that you promise and then you have an attitude about it, that's where you have to realize fans are paying for a product. You're getting paid millions of dollars regardless. You have three houses, five Ferraris. Like, suck it up.
After Deshaun Watson, who should be the most booed player in the NFL this coming season?
After Deshaun Watson.
Because Deshaun Watson is obviously going to be number one. For I
you
would
think
imagine,
so?
I think he will get boos from Browns fans at first. In fact, I think he will be booed everywhere.
I don't think Tom Brady's going to get booed because I think people saw when he retired how much the game will miss him, even though it was only for 2 months.
I think people like him more, too, because he's not on the Patriots anymore.
Right.
So
right.
That's a part of it, too, that more people have come around to it.
Who would even be up for the most booed player?
Aaron Rodgers?
I think if Aaron Rodgers continues to make controversial comments and make a myriad of people mad, he could be top.
There are a lot of people, though, that I
Baker Mayfield? If Baker Mayfield plays, especially depending on what team. Now, I don't see him starting in this league unless somebody gets hurt.
Okay. I don't either. I don't know where
but
the hell he goes next.
Like he did, let's pretend like he did.
He thinks he might go to Seattle next, I guess. On that podcast, he said that Seattle's interested. I don't buy that. I don't. I feel like no team is interested in him right now. Until someone gets hurt, no one's going to be interested
right.
in him.
Right. A lot of people are saying Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Most. That's a good call by you.
Let me think. Otherwise, because quarterbacks are the easiest ones to boo. Is there any player specifically that comes to mind when you say, yeah, you would boo this person? I can't really think of one. I mean, maybe some of the guys who've got red flags off the field or have done bad things off the field, you would think about it, like with a Tyreek Hill or something like that. But I don't know. I feel like people haven't really kept the same energy for a lot of these guys. The initial outrage sort of wears off and we forget that people do things after a couple of years.
It does. So culture. Culture is a big point of emphasis for the Texans and a lot of different teams.
It's annoying how much they say it, though. It
culture,
drives me crazy. Like,
culture.
Stop saying it. You're not good, okay? Like, let's wait a couple of years before we can talk about forming a culture, right? Because it takes time to do it.
Seahawks defensive lineman Al Woods was asked by reporters yesterday why he believes this team can compete without Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson, of course, two huge, huge pieces that were lost in the offseason for the Seahawks. And Wood said, quote, just the culture we have. The culture we have is a winning culture, us being competitive at practice. It's not going to be the same group of starters, but everyone goes out there and competes, blah, 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 blah. Togetherness, camaraderie, we work each other. Iron sharpens iron.
Oh, even more.
I think we're going to be all right.
I don't.
Do you believe it? Do you think winning culture is a thing? Do you think it's a farce?
I used to believe it. And it's just seeing Tom Brady. Look, Belichick was a big part of the formation of what the Patriots became. And he's a big part of why Tom Brady is the way that he is. Because Brady obviously was really engaged, but he had a coach that was just as engaged. And the two working together got the best out of each other, I think, because they both challenged each other. But when Brady leaves, what are the Patriots? How much does that culture stay? Clearly, the last 3 years have indicated that culture does not matter that much there. Brady goes to Tampa Bay, and this team that
all of a sudden they have a winning culture.
Right, exactly. Right. I think culture, especially in the NFL, is bogus to an extent because you have teams that change so much year to year. I mean, is there any league with more turnover than the NFL where the average player plays maybe at best a 3-year career if he's lucky? You have so many guys going in and out of the lineup because of injuries, because of contract situations, because of all sorts of different things. How do you keep a culture going? You have one great player. That's how you do it. And when you lose a quarterback, you can't tell me that the culture is going to be there. So, I mean, look, say all the cliches you want. What can you say when you have a microphone in your face and you're being asked about a team that no longer has a star quarterback?
Right, two future Hall of Famers.
Exactly. Like,
right.
You can't honestly say, yeah, we'll be fine. There's not going to be any dynamic of them that is missed. But that's exactly what's going to happen. Al Woods is referring to a culture that was created in Seattle in like 2011 and 2012 and 2013. You know, that was a decade ago. And now everyone is gone from said culture. So I think it's interesting that gets brought up as much as it does, specifically in football. I don't subscribe to it in the way that a lot of people do. You can have a good locker room, no doubt, but you need to have talent, guys who win. And to do that, generally, you just need to have a great quarterback.
I just asked everybody on Twitter, is winning culture a real thing or a farce? A little bit of both. Let us know what you think. I tend to agree with you for the most part. I think that when you hear stories about how the Patriot way, the Patriots did things the right way, etc. And then you have the quote from Josh McDaniels where he said he's not trying to do things the Patriot way in Vegas. Not a huge Josh McDaniels fan for certain reasons, but give him credit where it's due for realizing that the whole, well, we wear the right clothes. Everybody gets their 20 minutes. We don't have any fun at practice. You know what? That works if you've won 5 Super Bowls. I mean, like, that works.
Yeah.
To him for understanding that.
Let's jump into another sport. Baseball.
Mm.
The Yankees culture, iconic, all time. We don't let our players have long hair.
Yeah,
we don't let our
thing.
Players wear beards. We do things the Yankee way. What the hell has that done for them? I mean, they're the biggest disappointments in baseball over the past half decade because they've had some good moments, but what have they actually done with it? It's funny. It's really about, do you have a couple of guys that can do it? Now, I guess the devil's advocate argument is the Astros, because the Astros culture itself, I think, came together in a way that literally brought cultures together. You know, baseball is weird where you have people from all over the place.
All over the world, yeah.
And basketball is like that to an extent, but I mean, baseball is different in that you have a lot of players who are predominantly speaking another language, whether it's Spanish or it could be Japanese or Korean. You have all of these different cultures meshing together. And you could see how in a sport where guys are on the road for 162 games a year, where little cliques develop and people don't maybe talk with each other as much as they could. And the Astros do deserve a lot of credit for bringing that all together, because it was a very, very diverse group over the first couple of years of the team that has turned into the dominant power that they are today.
Somebody brought up Carlos Correa going to the Twins as proof that not everybody really cares about a winning culture if it doesn't even exist. That's true. And I mean, like, some people are just going to go where the bag is, check in, check out. And I'm not saying Carlos Correa is checked out. I'm just saying, even if winning culture is a thing, it's not at the top of the list for everybody.
Right. But it is funny, too, that someone goes, like Carlos Correa, goes to a team like that and is expected to all of a sudden to change a culture
right.
of a place. And like, does that definitively happen? Can that happen? Like, sometimes maybe you had the ability to change the culture, but you just are facing insurmountable odds, like Matt Stafford in Detroit. I was very skeptical.
Great point.
I was skeptical of him coming
that
to the Rams.
That will forever be the example.
I mean, because he was damn good this past season. As much doubt as I had about him going into the year, and especially in the playoffs, like, it was Sean McVay's fault that everything was as close as it was during the playoffs, and the Rams won in spite of Sean McVay. And I will stand by that one.
Yeah, you do stand by that one.
That is me dog whistling Sean McVay.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. We're going to reset the hour, talk a little Astros, Mariners.
Don't gaslight me, Sean.
Yeah, gaslight. I'm going to gaslight the heck out of Paul Gallant.
Like, don't make me feel crazy.
That's coming up on Vanessa and Gallant.
ESPN 97.5.